Welcome to the Zimcast, a program dedicated to bringing you what's new in agricultural marketing. The Zimcast is the official podcast of AgWired and hosted by Chuck and Cindy Zimmerman.
And this is Cindy Zimmerman giving Chuck the week off this week, bringing you this week's Zimcast, thanks to our sponsor, Growmark, locally owned and globally strong. Last week, I had the opportunity to attend for the second time the National Agricultural Aviation Association Convention. That's the NAAA convention. It was held in Las Vegas. And you can call them ag aviators, or you can call them aerial applicators, or even crop dusters. I call them the unsung heroes of agriculture because they very often risk their very lives and limbs flying close to the ground to protect crops all over the country, from corn and soybeans to rice and cotton, pasture land, sugar beets, potatoes, you name it. NAAA actually has over 1,500 members in 46 states who not only help protect our crops, but they really help to feed the world. And once again, we attended NAAA this year courtesy of our friends at BASF, a company which is very supportive of the aerial applicators, and they recognize their importance to the entire agriculture industry. Among the many ways that BASF supports NAAA is by sponsoring the convention kickoff breakfast, which always features a speaker with an aviation theme. And this year, that speaker was Brian Shull, who had a great story to tell of living your dream. Brian's a pilot, and he's also author of the coffee table book Sled Driver, Flying the World's Fastest Jet. The book is a compilation of photos that Brian took over many years flying the SR-71 Blackbird. And by the way, it would make a great Christmas gift for anyone on your list who appreciates military aircraft and or breathtaking photography. Brian gives his website at the end of the interview, but just a preview here. The website's real simple, sleddriver.com. That's sleddriver.com. So I interviewed Brian at NAAA about the plane, about the book, and about his interest in photography. We are here at the National Agricultural Aviation Association meeting. That's the NAAA in Las Vegas. With me is Brian Shull, who has a wonderful story. He was our kickoff breakfast speaker on the first day of NAAA, had a wonderful story to tell about really getting a new lease on life after being shot down in Vietnam, correct, Brian?
Yes.
Very seriously injured, spending a year in the hospital and wanting to die, but then turning his life around and deciding to make his dreams come true and really going forward and not looking back. Being born again is the way you talked about it, getting a new lease on life and really following your dreams. And part of that was one of the things you did was you went right out and you were able to get approved to fly again and started flying some of the most fabulous planes that were ever made. Tell us just briefly a little bit about those planes.
Well, I was very fortunate to get back in flying status and was able to go back and flew the A7, F5, the A-10, and ended up flying the SR-71, the world's fastest, highest flying jet. So I was very fortunate to be able to pass the physical to do those things. And the process continued with my love for photography and ended up with a pretty rare collection of photographs of the Blackbird. But I always believed, and I learned in my hospital stay, that it was very important, if I ever could get back to life, to never miss an opportunity to pursue your passion, live your dream, do the things each day that make you feel good, that are important to you, instead of putting them off. And so I guess I was a little more enthused and motivated to not miss a moment of it through either my photography or just doing the thing. So I've always said I was the luckiest person to get to do those things. But I think I made the most of it because I knew what it was like to have that all taken away.
Well, and the photography was absolutely breathtaking. What really came out to me was you were talking about how you really didn't know what you were doing. You were just taking photos from the cockpit, and some of them were just unbelievable shots that had never been seen before. Flying at 80,000 feet, looking at the world from that, and these shots were unreal. So it really struck me that you didn't know really what you were doing. You were self-taught as far as photography was concerned, and you were using film at the time, right? So what years were these?
This was back in the 80s. It was all Kodachrome slides, old manual Nikon cameras. And the fun part for me was I was literally teaching myself, reading books on photography, talking to professional photographers, just kind of learning. And I had such a wonderful opportunity around the airplanes, of course, but also I was doing nature photography on the weekends when I wasn't flying. So it was just a passion. And, you know, when you love something, you will learn it because you'll spend the time doing it and you'll spend the necessary time learning it. It's fun for me today to see those pictures because I know when I took them that I had so many doubts and questions. And I think the trick was to just take thousands of pictures. And the ones that you see now, I have 220 pictures after 7 years that I now think of 7 years of being around the airplane that I thought were worthy. So each one of those pictures represents hundreds and hundreds that I threw out that I didn't quite get the shot right. But the more I did it, the more I appreciated what could be done. And I learned, and you know, slowly to get better at it. But I look at those pictures with as much amazement as other people do now. I don't take credit for them as some great photographer because I realize how much luck, and it's really a statement of perseverance because, as I said, many, many slides were thrown out for that 1 in 100 that you said was actually composed and in focus and the lighting was good. So, yeah, it was a very manual process back then. There was no digital or anything, so it was just a good example of what you do when you just persevere and you stick to it, and there's a lot of love for what you're doing, so you put the time in.
And you put these all together in a very beautiful book. Tell me about that.
Well, we wanted to do something to honor the airplane in a good way. And if the pictures were, in fact, as rare and good as people were saying, we wanted to do it right. And so we spent 2 years to my company. We did it ourselves, put together a book on the plane that I wrote. I flew the jet, wrote the book, and took all the pictures. So that we always say that's a little claim of infamy there for an aviation book. But We're most proud of the book in that it won Aviation Book of the Year more for the writing than the pictures. Of course, everyone will thumb through and look at the photographs, but to be recognized by the Smithsonian Magazine for the writing, that was the hardest part, to be honest, and I was really proud of that. And that's why the book is still around 20 years later. That book is still the most popular book in the world. It's because it has something to say and puts the reader in the plane. It is not just a picture book you look through one time and put down. That book has had longevity. It's the longest running coffee table aviation book ever. And again, I'm very proud of that because we really had to do it all ourselves. And it was a tribute to the most remarkable aircraft of the 20th century.
Now, you also mentioned that there was no rules about not taking a camera in there because nobody thought that anybody would be dumb enough to do that. How difficult was it to photograph from this plane?
Well, it was very difficult because it was a very jealous airplane. It knew when you weren't paying attention to her, and little lights would come on. And very difficult, just quick moments to try and get a shot if you could. I carried a small camera in my spacesuit pocket. That wasn't always my bigger, larger camera, and had it on a lanyard so that I couldn't drop it. And only at certain times, maybe on training missions, I'd pull it up and have just a second or two. And I had practice. I'd actually sit in the cockpit on the weekends in the hangar, and I would practice the maneuver so that I could do it within seconds and not drop anything or hurt anything. It was just a little mission I really wanted to capture because I knew that that site was so remarkable for just jet pilots, and for us to see that, I thought it. I just had this desire to preserve it, and I'm proud that I did now. And I know it probably irritated a few people that hey, this guy carried it, but for 99% of all the guys that ever flew the airplane, they have the book, they love the book, and they're glad that we have those pictures today. But it was just a labor of love, and I was in love with the airplane, as all of us were who flew it, in love with the photography, and it was a mating of those two that came together that I think really spawned this book.
Now, of course, you moved on from there. You also spent a year with the Thunderbirds and a year with the Blue Angels and documented them and did some great photography there. And now you really are more concentrated on your nature photography. Beautiful stuff there as well. But my question is to you about the transition from Kodachrome to digital. When did you make that transition and compare the two of them?
Well, I'll tell you, I was very slow to go. I was dragging my feet. I didn't believe in it initially, and I waited and waited and waited, and I pretty much didn't do a lot of photography during those years when digital was new. I put my cameras down, and I allowed the digital to, I watched it, I observed it, I saw my friends, looked at their cameras, asked a lot of questions. Then one day I sat down and I read all the books on how all that works so I could understand it. And then I bought a very small little digital point-and-shoot camera. And I said, all right, let me just play with this because I wasn't sold on it. And I was very impressed with the little, and this was like the 2-megapixel, you know, era. And I liked it. I thought, you want me to hold it?
No, it's
I liked that, and it it started me on, and then we slowly progressed, and I got my Nikon D2X, and now I have a D3X. And as time went on, of course, they improved the technology, but I had a good understanding of what it did. And then it finally did get better than film. It finally surpassed film. It got to where now the door is open to such photographic possibilities and capabilities that we could never have then. Just the fact that we don't have to deal with film anymore, and we can bump up the ISO and shoot in low light, and you could review your film in 1 second after you take it, review your shot. That is such a revolution that I am totally digital. I have every lens Nikon ever made, I think, and I still only use 3 or 4 of them all the time, the big telephotos. But I have my D3X and I have a D7000 as my backup camera, and I use them for different things. I carry a little Sony point-and-shoot around with me sometimes. And I find that now what you can do in the processing on the computer with the photo, you can make that picture come alive in a way that you were always frustrated a little bit with film. Now, I will admit to the purists out there that there's something still about a Kodachrome slide when I used to look at them on the light table, or sometimes you'd get a really great print. There was a flavor to that that we'll never see again. Okay, I'll say that. But I have taken some of those old Kodachrome slides and scanned them and done a digital print, and I got to tell you, it's really nice. And like I said, what we can do today, the capabilities are exciting, and I was slow to go, but I waited, and I'm glad I did because the equipment got better and the process got better, and it's wonderful now.
Well, I know that the trade show is revving up here, and you are going to be in high demand as you were yesterday. People lined up for an hour and a half to order your book. And what I'd like to do is find out what your website is if people want to find out more about you and maybe order your book.
Absolutely. It's real easy. It's kind of the title of the book. Go to www.sleddriver.com, SLEDDRIVER, sleddriver.com. And we have a list of our products. We have T-shirts and cards and prints and things. But, yeah, the books are going fast. We ordered a new batch of 5,000 books this summer, and we've already gone through 1,000 books in the last 3 months. So it's a popular book. It was a one-of-a-kind airplane, and it's a one-of-a-kind book. So I'm proud to have done it, and I think I'm a better photographer now, but I look with amazement at what I did back then, just kind of like the blind squirrel getting the nut. It was fun, and you know, if it's not fun, why are you doing it? It ought to be fun. I don't ever understand people doing things in life or staying in, you know, my flying was fun, my photography is fun, writing the books, speaking, doing these things. If you're not having some ounce of fun, sure, there's a lot of hard work and involved in time and effort, but you do it because you really want to do it, and that's the secret, I think, of being happy in life. I'm doing the things I really enjoy doing, and sometimes they wear me out. I'm exhausted, but it really is rewarding, and I get the biggest kick out of someone now buying one of my nature prints, because that means they really like the photography versus, I know when they buy the jet print, they love the jet. It doesn't matter how great the picture is. But when they buy a duck print or butterfly print, I know that I've done something nice, and I'm really proud of the bird prints I have now. And as a pilot, I guess I'm fascinated with the flying creatures and really, really enjoy doing it. So, hey, do what you love. It's the secret of life.
And you are a very blessed man, and you have been very popular here at the NAAA, and it's been a pleasure to meet you and hear your story. And I would like to conclude our Zimcast this week with the song that Brian said inspired him when he was feeling like he didn't want to go on, when he was in the hospital recovering from his injuries. And that song was Somewhere Over the Rainbow. So just think of the words to that. That's what inspired Brian to go out and live his dreams. And I'm not concluding with it because it is kind of copyright protected. So we're just not going to conclude with it. Just think of the words. That's our Zimcast for this week. Thanks to our sponsor, Growmark. Locally owned, globally strong. Thanks for listening. I'm Cindy Zimmerman.
You've been listening to the Zimcast, the official podcast of AgWired. Check us out at www.agwired.com to find out what's new in agricultural marketing.